If that wasn't Michael Myers burning up in that car, then a lot of other kids are going to be slaughtered tonight.
He's dead. I saw him.
I saw a man in a mask.
It was him.
I want to believe you, but I got to be sure. I can't stop until I'm certain that he's dead.
You're talking about him like he's some kind of animal.
He was my...
Would you keep him back?
He was my patient for 15 years. It became an obsession with me until I realized that there was nothing within him, neither conscience nor reason, that wasn't even remotely human. An hour ago, I stood up and fired 6 shots into him. He just got up and walked away. I am talking about the real possibility that he is still out there.
Welcome to Double Impact, the podcast where we double back on the movies that impacted us growing up as 90s kids and decide whether they hold up today or are best left in the past. I'm Tristan.
And I'm Greg. It's good to be back with you again for another week of Halloween, scary time, spooktacular.
Yeah, something like that. Week four. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Yeah.
Ish. Big week in Sydney, Tristan.
Yeah.
Freedom Week. We are with freedom of sorts. We can do some things.
I've been easing into it. I haven't gone crazy just yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the little things.
What things have you eased into?
Walking without a mask.
Oh, yeah.
It's nice. It feels like almost like, you know, you're a bit naked. You feel the wind.
Like when you shave or have a haircut.
Yeah. We ate at a place.
Whoa, you sat down there?
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
And we went grocery shopping together.
All the big
things. I was less enthused by, yeah. How about you? You made it to the pub, right?
Yes, I had a nachos and 2 schooners.
Nice.
I'm not an always nachos guy, but damn, these were great nachos.
If you're going to be a dad, which you are, you need to call it nachos.
Nachos.
Nachos and tacos.
Tacos, mate. These were some quality nachos.
Yeah.
I'll get them again. And I'm back at jiu-jitsu, once again reminded that I'm terrible at jiu-jitsu.
Oh, yeah, I went to the gym. That was something.
You went to the gym, of course, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Back into the groove, man. It's nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's talk about Halloween 2.
Halloween 2, our mini-series here is culminating in the Halloweeniest of Halloween franchises.
Mm.
And
true to the name.
Yeah, one of the best ones in the franchise that's not the first one. So there you go.
Yeah.
Maybe. Oh, when did this one come out? 1981.
81, the year before BG, 1BG, G being Greg, me, 3BT.
3BT, yeah, it's true.
3BT, wasn't that a boy band or was that 3T? 5T, or is that a gang?
3T. 5T is the gang, yeah. 3T is the boy band, 3BT is 3 years before Tristan.
Yeah, cool.
People always get those three things mixed up.
Always. And they're often discussed at the same time, which is very confusing. But,
I know.
You know.
I get a lot of inquiries about 5T.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes get, you know, fan mail from 3T.
You would have had a 5T fringe in your high school days, I would have thought, at some point. Fangs?
Yeah, yeah. My hair was curly though, so whenever I tried to grow a cool fringe, it kind of didn't work. And then even when it wasn't quite a long fringe, but I did like experiment with the peroxide and shit.
Mm.
I got my dad to do it to make my fringe like that orangey color, you know, the cool thing. He left it in too long and it basically went white and I looked like Mr. Sheffield.
Very good.
Complete opposite of the intended aesthetic.
You know, a tailor that I like in Sydney, Patrick Johnson, they've been referencing Maxwell Sheffield is a bit of a style lord, a style icon.
Interesting.
And I was like, a lot. And then when they posted a bunch of shots, it's all stuff that they sell, like knitted polos with a collar, like long sleeve.
I mean, he was always overshadowed by Miss Fine.
Yeah, but he had some low key style.
Yeah.
FYI.
I can see that.
So 81, Tristan,
yeah.
You know, when we do our member berries, we cast a thought back to the year. This is predating us again, back to back.
Yeah.
We talk a lot about inventions. We talk a lot about TV debuts, ads we love sometimes. Mm. I'm going to talk a little bit less tangible today.
Okay.
Would you believe that 1981 is the birth of the millennial.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's the first year that is the defined group. Well, in most instances, there was a couple that had an earlier year, but yeah, broadly accepted as the millennials are born from 1981 to 1996.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, right? Because I'm sure you, myself, and other millennials in that are sort of older bracket, you know, I think we tend to identify, you know, well, in many instances, a bit more Gen X, maybe a little bit more millennial as we've got older, but if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's a very broad term, but it's not like shit just changed in 81. Like,
well, that's right.
It's all arbitrary.
And it's also a very big group, a large cohort, if you will.
Yeah.
Like someone born in 1981 or 82, me, versus someone born in 1996 would have a fairly different life stage for one.
Yeah.
I would argue.
Very much so.
14 years younger than me. That's mid-20s.
Yeah.
Probably still having a good time.
Gen Y is also millennial, right? Are they one-to-one the same thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interchangeable terms.
So at least we've got the term millennial. One of my gripes with this whole thing is that we've run out of names because then we've got millennial at least, but otherwise known as Gen Y, then Gen Z. And now they're going to Gen Alpha.
Mm.
They're just going back to the beginning of the alphabet. We're using the Greek ones now. It's bullshit.
Mm. I like that approach.
No, I don't want letters. I want clever names like baby boomers, millennials.
Fair enough.
The builders or something, our grandparents. Like, that shit's cool.
So you reckon the guys brought in Generation X, and at which point was probably still cool.
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
We're just
going to run with that.
Because it's a cool letter, but it's not like there was Gen W before that, right?
Yeah.
It's a false, it's like a franchise sequel chain gone off the rails.
It is. So we had the Lost Generation.
Yeah, that's right.
83 to 1900. The Greatest Generation, well, I mean, okay, fair enough. You can have your two world wars, champs. That was 1901 to 27.
Yeah, but we won them. we used to win wars back then. We didn't just leave them in tatters.
That's very astute on your part.
So, very astute. Silent Generation, 28 to 45. Yeah. Boomers 46 to 64. Oh, wow. So my dad's actually Silent Generation. He's not even a boomer.
Wow.
Can't even hit him with the okay boomer.
That's impressive.
Mm.
Man, I don't know how you feel, but working in advertising, I feel, there's various stages in my life where fucking millennials, this whole concept of millennials has been such a pain in the ass, man, because it's like working in advertising, especially when we started, when we were young, but also being millennials, the conversation in the boardrooms were always, how do we get these millennials? How do we get these millennials?
Mm-hmm.
But it got to the point like 5 years into our careers or whatever, we're 25, 26, 27, 28, that kind of age group. Most of the people in the meeting are millennials.
Yeah.
So it's just like we keep talking about this thing like they're a foreign species. And I think just this idea of buying into the label so hard, like we were saying, that there is such a distinct difference when the clock ticks over to 1981, and there really isn't.
Yeah, because from a marketing and target audience perspective, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, yeah. Why would you ever have something that broad, and yet we were so obsessed with, we need to understand these millennials. We are them. They're us. and then more recently, I posted a very popular TikTok recently on our TikTok account. Check it out. It's probably one of the greatest things I've ever made, if potentially one of the greatest videos on the internet, where it's the scene from Big where they play on the big piano, except I dubbed in the Still Dre. Into it. And I used the headline, "If Big was made by millennials," which was not intended to be any kind of exclusionary thing. I thought it was perfectly innocent. Yeah, I grew up in the 90s. I liked that song in the 90s. If I made this movie in the 90s, I would have done this. I'm a millennial. Let's just use that phrase because everyone understands it. I mean, I'm going against everything I just said. But you know, you get what I'm saying. Man, the comments went nuts. All these Gen Xers so offended. Some just jokingly, which is fun banter, but others like – they just immediately choose hate. Like,
that's so Gen X.
If Big was made by millennials, the entire movie would be arguments about labels. I'm going to read something. What's another one? You mean 80s babies? Millennials wouldn't understand an album that came out in 2001. First of all, 80s babies are millennials, like we're saying. And the album, the song came out in 1999. So don't you fucking explain this to me. I just made that up. Gen X-plain. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, good. Good.
And then there's some, like, look at all the goofy Gen X people in the comments getting pissed over us. But there's some that get
the angry generation, perhaps.
Oh, my God. Yeah. It's so funny. They're so angry. They are angry.
Not quite a boomer, not quite a millennial.
Yeah, I think they are really angry. Well, here I go. Now I'm buying into the whole concept again. Anyway, I've completely hijacked your member, Barry, but I had to get off my chest.
No, this is good bants. That's the year that it all started.
Yeah. And been the greatest generation ever since.
Of all time. I've always identified with Gen X, though. And so, you know, yeah, whatever. Both. I guess we are at the...
Yeah, we talked about this recently, too. I think having older siblings helps because they're bringing home the CDs. They're bringing home the... Mm. You're getting their hand-me-downs. You're getting very influenced on a day-to-day basis.
Oh, yeah.
Big year for millennials. Big year for a real generational shift, you might say, 1981.
You might.
Yeah, it was also a big year for movies. We've been to this year only once before, so we're definitely under index. Maybe we need to do a mini-series on 1981 specifically. Mm. But it's the year of Raiders of the Lost Ark. Raiders of the Lost Ark, the number one film in the world. 1981. We had a Bond flick number 2, For Your Eyes Only. That's a Bond one, isn't it?
Sure is. One of my favourites.
Superman number 2 at number 3, and the list goes on. Our Stripes is in there. A lot of these aren't super interesting. But it was a big year for horror as well. Friday the 13th part 2 came out, playing a little catch up there.
Oh, yep.
You know, hot on the heels of course, the film we're talking about today, which came in at number 31, Halloween 2. It came out in October, funnily enough, of 1981. Budget of $2.5 million. So the budget has skyrocketed. Part one, the budget was only $300. Remember, they were hand-painting leaves to make it look like autumn.
Leaves to make it look autumnal.
Autumnal, yeah. Budget of $2.5 million with a gross of $25.5 million. Not bad. For context, the original made like 60 or 70 mil. So not as big.
Which did, sorry?
The original Halloween one. Yeah. So not as big. Similar trend when it comes to Rotten Tomatoes scores, with a critic score of 31% and an audience score of 63%. Critic consensus says Halloween 2 picks up where its predecessor left off and quickly wanders into a dead end that the franchise would spend decades struggling to find its way out of.
Mm.
A dead end, or maybe just an end, which the franchise would spend decades trying to undo.
Probably.
Yeah. Like, that's coming from an interesting place, that one.
Hmm.
Fuck you, consensus man.
Yeah, don't know about that one.
I'm not saying I love this movie by any means. I don't think either of us had seen this before this year, right?
No, there was parts of it that looked familiar, but, you know, you've probably...
I had that too.
Yeah, maybe it's Trope City. Maybe this is that we've seen... You know, little cutouts in montages over the years, probably.
Yeah. I had a moment, we'll get into the rewatch later, but I did have a moment where I was like, oh, have I seen this? I thought I'd seen it. It might have been, maybe I started it after we watched Halloween last year. I don't know. Or maybe the Rob Zombie one is closer. I don't know. But anyway, I hadn't. I watched it this week for the first time. Yeah. We obviously did Halloween 1. This time last year, and we were both like pretty impressed with it. Because I think, not that we had low expectations.
To say the least.
To say the least. But it's definitely one of those franchises, maybe akin to a John Rambo First Blood kind of thing, where the sequels don't necessarily reflect what the original was. And I think I just, in my head, we talked about this last week too, Jason and Michael Myers were kind of interchangeable. But that first Halloween, I dare to say, rocked our world. So I did go on to watch a bunch of Halloween movies after that last year. Did you watch any additional, or saved it all for this year?
No, I haven't really. I watched 2018 today, the first half.
Oh, yeah.
Because I wanted to get a little bit of extra, because it is such a, and I'm sure we'll talk about the timeline, but yeah, it's just such a wacky.
Oh, it's wacky.
Mishmash of, it's it's a very interesting collection of films that have various takes on where they're meant to be in the whole timeline of the story of Michael Myers.
Yeah.
So I wanted to add something to the conversation today. So I watched 2018.
Nice.
Which was follows on from number two? Or
from number one.
Ah, yes.
Which raises some issues. I got some questions on that.
And you've gone down a rabbit hole. So what have you watched?
So I've watched the 2018 one last year.
Well, what haven't you watched?
And I watched the Rob Zombie ones last year. I'd seen the first one before, but I rewatched them both. They're fucking brutal, man.
Hello.
And then this year, to fill in the gaps.
Is that his real name?
I assume so. So there's from the zombies down on 8th.
Yeah.
I watched the zombie one. Yeah, so this year I watched, decided to try and fill in the gaps. I watched two, of course. I skipped three because it's a standalone thing, whatever. I wanted to follow the Michael Myers thing. So I watched 4, 5, 6. 6 is the one with Paul Rudd. 7, which is Halloween H2O, which is where the timeline gets all wacky. So the only one I haven't seen at any point, I think, is Halloween Resurrection, which is the sequel to H2O, which is another one that is pretty widely received as bad following a pretty good one, because H2O is received relatively positively. And it's the same director as this one, so that's interesting. Poor guy. Got a second shot and fails again.
Oh.
Poor bastard.
You will laugh.
I've got a good background. It's inspiring me. My Zoom background is is Michael Myers on fire walking down the hospital hallway with a very scared Laurie Strode. With a scalpel, his weapon of choice in part two, or one of many, many medical weapons of choice. Should I get into the origin story?
Please.
Origin story.
First one, did good, make more.
That's pretty much it, man. So Halloween 1 comes out in 1978, huge success, all those numbers we just mentioned before, huge. Wasn't expected to be. This is like John Carpenter at his scrappiest, just wants to make cool shit. And as far as he's concerned, he made some cool shit. It went surprisingly well. And in his book, that's it, job done. And in those days as well, like sequels weren't really as much of a thing. You don't really make things expecting to make sequels in those days. And so especially for someone like John Carpenter who wants to go on and make
now.
Other – versus now, yeah. Especially for someone like John, Mr. Carpenter, who wants to go out and make all kinds of shit, last thing he wants is to be trapped in a franchise. But Hollywood had other plans. So obviously this did fucking well. So to your point, Greg, dollar signs, you know, flip in the eyes of the producers. But he was adamant that he wanted to go on to make something else, which would go on to become The Fog. And John Carpenter's an interesting man. I think he's pissed a lot of people off. but I like him. But basically
he step to the beat of his own drum?
Yeah, and he just doesn't buy it. He's kind of like the George Harrison of the group. He doesn't really care. We're just a band. It's just a movie. And basically the producer of the first one and then going into the second one, Irwin Yablans, was like, I feel you, man. I respect the artistry. You go make The Fog with us and we'll produce it and all that shit, as long as you make Halloween 2 as the next thing after that. And he understood that they had a deal, but then he went and made The Fog with someone else. Carpenter went and made The Fog with someone else. And so Yablans sued that studio and Carpenter. And the result of that lawsuit was he was committed. He had to commit to coming back to do Halloween 2. I don't know how specific it gets because he obviously didn't direct it, but he did write it. But obviously with that chain of events, he's not coming to the project highly enthused. You know what I mean? And he doesn't really care.
want to be there.
Exactly. And it feels like, I don't, just from different bits and pieces I've picked up, it seems like he kind of, he treated this like a uni assignment he didn't really want to do and kind of just crammed it out in one night. Because I think as well for him, it's hard to elaborate on a story where part of what you wanted to create of that story is not giving away too much, and it's less is more. So you take this thing that less is more and you want more of that less is more. It's just, that's just more.
It's very astute on your part.
That's just more. It's very astute on your part. Oh, thank you. So he goes away and writes a script. He's legally obligated to, not so much passionately so. But I guess the other side of that too is that he wasn't against the franchise continuing. He just didn't want to do it. So he's like, I'm happy to let another up-and-coming director fucking have a shot at this now. Like, that was my big break. This could be someone else's big break. So he's not being a total dick. He's just not super emotionally invested in it himself. And so Tommy Lee Wallace, who was a production designer and one of the editors from part one, stepped up to the plate to be the director. Now, context here is since 1978, there's been a few more horror movies.
Yeah.
There's been the Friday the 13th, others. And what this new script needed to account for was gory inflation. The cost of entry into horror now,
yeah,
the gore levels were through the roof, which again is something that feels quite counter. Blood. They want blood. I'm here for blood, man. Which again feels counter to what the first one stood for. But Carpenter was aware that he needed to up his gore game if this movie was going to be competitive in the box office, if it was going to capture the frights and scares of America and the world. So he wrote it with that in mind, and it did up the gore. And, you know, we'll get into the rewatch, but I'm sure we noticed a bit more gore than there was last time.
Oh, did we?
But then guess what happens? He hands in this script, and Tommy Lee Wallace, God bless him, this is his big break, and Irwin Yablans, the producer aforementioned, were not over the moon about what John Carpenter turned in. Here's them talking about it and expressing their disappointment, shall we say.
And I was thrilled. It was just, yes, of course, that's a great opportunity. Can't wait. So you can imagine my dismay when the script came back to me and I read it, and I just hated it.
I personally was not too pleased with the script when I got it. It was pedestrian. It was predictable. I just felt that they were abandoning the essence of the character.
That Strode girl, that's Michael Myers' sister.
It felt like everything that Halloween was not. Sort of the antithesis, where Halloween got it done with suggestion and shadows and true old-school suspense technique. Somehow to me, Halloween 2 was summed up with that, like, hypodermic in the eyeball. It was just like, come on.
The theater of the mind to me has always been something I really love, and I've used it. Halloween 1 was born of that idea, and my instructions to Carpenter, has been reported many, many times, was I don't want anyone to see any gore or violence or blood in the movie. Keep it to a minimum. I want it to be theater of the mind. I want people to supply the visual images. And Carpenter understood that perfectly, and therein lies the success of Halloween.
John's thinking on the matter was very clear and simple. You can't argue with the fact that since Halloween got made and all these imitators, Friday the 13th and all the others came along, horror movies had changed. But I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it and really do the good job that would be expected with deep sincerity. So I felt horrible, but I withdrew from the project.
Tommy Lee Wallace is out.
Interesting.
It is interesting because that was from a making of, and when I was watching that earlier today, I was like, here we go. Revisionist history at its best. Them talking about, you know, some of the stuff that wasn't well received. They didn't like it from day one. But then he did pull out. That director didn't direct it. So I guess that's true to some degree. I mean, I should caveat too that Carpenter doesn't like it either. Again, I guess he's just writing out of obligation. It's not like this is a story he's been itching to tell. So they pull in another director. I think this guy, Rick Rosenthal, he was an up-and-comer. I think he'd been directing TV, but it seems like he had the same agent as Carpenter, and so somehow through that connection, Carpenter's like, yeah, here's this guy. This was his first movie. As I mentioned, he'd go on to do Halloween Resurrection, another one that's nobody's favorite, I don't think, but it does have the lovely Busta Rhymes.
Ah.
Yeah, yeah.
Break your neck.
And I guess I've been teetering around the script itself, but I guess the big idea of the script, the plot, the overall direction was the idea of this being the same night, picks up exactly where the last one left off, a direct continuation, which I think is a smart idea. Nothing wrong with that idea. You know, if you like the first one, you're going to like this because it's literally just a continuation.
Yeah.
But the nugget that I think became the controversial piece, aside from the gore, in terms of the legacy of this movie and in terms of what Carpenter hates about it that he came up with, was the whole Laurie Strode being Michael Myers' sister thing.
Mm.
But that was those two ingredients, I suppose, were the core of the idea. It's a continuation and we find out a shocking twist.
No.
Yeah. Exciting stuff. We'll unpack that one in the rewatch. But ultimately, they get these people to cram them into a hospital, get Donald Pleasance to shoot a lot of guns, missing a lot of targets, and bish bash bosh, you got yourself a movie.
You do.
Should we play the trailer?
I shot him 6 times. I shot him in the heart. Human.
Universal Pictures presents Halloween 2, More of the Night He Came Home.
Who is it?
There was nothing within him, neither conscience nor reason, that wasn't even remotely human.
This is some kind of a joke. I've been trick-or-treated to death tonight.
You don't know what death is.
Janet, go tell Mr. Garrett we're having trouble with the phones.
There is no place to hide. He will always find you.
What's this?
It's a Celtic word. It means the Lord of the Dead.
Halloween 2, More of the Night He Came Home.
More. That should just be the tagline. That should be the name. More Halloween. Boom. Makes sense. Oh, man. What happened in this movie, Greg Carney?
More. Okay,
more of everything.
Sorry. More everything. We're immediately transported back to Haddonfield, Illinois. It's 31st of October, 1978, Halloween.
Oh,
in the burbs.
Yeah.
No big parties. There's no sexy nurses yet. No sexy vampires. Just a killer. An invincible killer.
Yeah.
He's been shot 6 times. He's vanished into thin air, leaving in his wake 5 bodies. But he's not done.
He's thirsty for more.
More. Our heroine, Laurie Strode, is transported to the nearby hospital after the horrific evening. Dr. Loomis, Michael's longtime doctor and turned assassin.
Yeah.
Or attempted assassinator, stays at the scene to try and find Michael. He's not getting a lot of traction with local law enforcement, despite the quintuple homicide. So Michael continues his spree. He moves from house to house, acquiring a kitchen knife. He learns of Laurie's whereabouts via a news broadcast at the local Memorial Hospital. The perfect setting to watch some foolish teens drop one by one in exotic circumstances. You can fill in the blanks from here.
Yeah.
Finn.
More. More of everything.
More. That was a a brief one. I think that's what we all deserved.
Yeah, yeah. Well, okay. So how did you feel about it? What was the initial reaction?
Not too bad. Like, I was going in with very low standards. Same. And especially after watching last week, Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed the continuation aspect. That was cool. Mm. Like, it literally starts where we left off in the previous film, which is nice, you know.
Yeah.
Most sequels, you know, have got some sort of distant take or the story doesn't flow straight away. So that was kind of interesting. But, you know, it does drift a lot more into just generic slasher territory.
Yeah. Yeah. Not as far as it would later drift, but yeah.
Mm.
I think I was similar
it's a bridge.
You can it's the first step in what would be a very disappointing journey.
Yeah, it's a step in the wrong direction. I didn't hate it.
Same.
That's for sure.
I think I had really low expectations too. I think because I'd looked at the Rotten Tomato scores and things, it is a significant drop off. But I don't mind it. The other one's just perfection. That's the only issue.
Mm.
Yeah, it's fine. Like, compared to Halloween 1, obviously not as good. Compared to other slasher movies, especially the last 10 I watched last week in the Friday the 13th, it's better than half of them, I'd say, at least. I'll get more into the other sequels later, which is a different story. But I think it was in some ways, it's probably the closest one that's tonally and aesthetically similar to the first one. But right from the get-go, there is like a bit of a shift.
Yeah.
Because you know how in the beginning it kind of recaps the end of the last one? The music's different and it feels a bit more like the less is more thing is already gone. So I went, I pressed play and I was like, I think this is different. And so I went back and watched the end of Halloween 1.
Oh, nice.
I did intend to watch all of Halloween 1 again, but I didn't get a chance. And I was watching all the shit ones. And it was – the music was different. It was a lot more hectic.
Sandman.
A lot more going on. Oh, the Sandman came back, but it was more like
– was that in the first one?
I think so. I think it's the beginning of the – it's in – I think the beginning. I can't remember. But it was –
it's good though.
Where they're recapping, you know, the final fight basically, the music's completely different. And it's not even recapping. It's re-showing it. So it's interesting that they decided to put different music over the top.
Right.
Well, it's still it's still got John Carpenter's score and everything, so it was still within that realm. It wasn't like they didn't do it like a Suicide Squad and throw on an ironic 70s jam or something like that. But yeah, so I was like, okay, this is going to be a little bit different. Manage your expectations. But yeah, I did like how it just kind of continued.
It was neat.
It was neat.
Neato.
It was real neato. I think the parts of this movie I like where it kind of, yes, ends the first one, but not so much in terms of the story of Michael Myers, but more in terms of, okay, if this really happened, what might be some other implications? One being another trick-or-treater wearing the same mask getting killed by accident. You know, that kind of shit. That was like, oh, this is interesting. Heartbreaking. The poor guy, man.
Yeah, he was like 17. He got hit by a car and then burned alive.
And Loomis is like so trigger happy, he's so ready. He's like, I'm gonna fucking get you. It's got blonde hair.
Yeah,
it's
Loomis,
a different one.
Mate, Michael's not the only guy needing to be locked up.
Yeah, unhinged. Unhinged.
But he knew he knew.
But as tragic as that is, that's an interesting little spin on, okay, well, if this really happened, yeah, that would probably fucking happen. Also, that van just explodes on impact. They don't make them like the
it was carrying dynamite.
Oh, right. Of course.
It's Halloween dynamite.
Halloween dynamite. the deaths are funnier. The murders are funnier. Not in a sadistic way. It's just funnier how they cram these elaborate scenarios in, like a hot tub death in a hospital.
You know what? It could have been better.
Yeah, because so it goes up to 140 degrees Fahrenheit. Okay, so old mate at the hospital, I guess he's a paramedic or something, and he's hooking up with a nurse on the regular, it seems. He's definitely punching. It's the old trope where, of course, She wants to bang him because why not? And so they meet in, I guess,
yeah, that's what some men and women do when they're alone in a dark hospital, isn't it? I assume.
It is a dark hospital.
Very poorly lit. Terrible for surgery.
Yeah. Well, they get into some sort of therapeutic tub, I suppose. But they treat it like a hot tub and they're about to get it on. But Michael Myers has other plans and he murders them all. They got murdered. They got deaded. But here's the thing, that hot tub.
John Coffey is a murderer.
He turns it up and it goes all the way up to 140 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 60 degrees Celsius. Is that enough to melt your face off?
Well, water boils at what, 100 degrees?
Yeah. So almost a bit more than half that. I feel like we've hit 60 degrees as a weather temperature somewhere in the world.
Yeah, 30.
We've hit 50.
I think like 30 degrees is a pretty warm spa, I think.
I don't think so. I think it's hotter.
Is it?
I remember from being a child, whenever I would look at the temperature.
From being a child?
Because pools, the water temperature is always colder than you think. When you say that it's like, oh, the water temperature is 25, that sounds nice. You get in, you're like, ooh, it's a bit nipply.
37 to 38 is the.
It's only 20 degrees warmer
than a spa.
Yeah. Michael, you gotta do more than that.
Maybe he thought it was Celsius.
What he Plot thinks twist. Doesn't change. Well, her face melts. So it's not even down to what he thinks. And I guess it's a good, and there's lots of syringes and shit in the deaths that follow. And I guess that one is the best example. But the deaths get more elaborate, which at first I was like a bit like everything we set up until this point. It feels a bit too far away from the first one. But then again, I was thinking maybe that kind of works. Like, this guy is pure evil. In the first one, it's more just pure functional murders. And now he's getting a bit more, it's more evil in that it's, is he enjoying this? Enjoying killing people in different ways? And so it's almost an arc, a character arc of getting more and more evil, like getting more.
He's learning to like it.
Yeah. Although I don't know where he learned all this medical shit, because I think seems like one of the nurses he kills by just letting her blood out. Like he hooks her up to a drip or something. That's not easy to do, is it? Surely.
Well, he was in a sanitarium.
He was. I told you, it was a sanitation.
You said sanitation. I said, you said sanitarium. Okay.
Okay.
So maybe he spent some time with Scarface.
Maybe.
I'm Mike Myers, political prisoner from Haddonfield.
I got a little clip of Michael Myers. I got a little clip of John Carpenter talking about this movie. Do you want to hear what he has to say?
I do.
Once you had done Halloween, were you at all, no more Halloween? Well, I said that for quite a while. There are two sides to one when you work in the movie business. One is as an artist, or you think of yourself as a creative person, and the other side is a business person. And I let my producer side come out when they offered me the sequels to Halloween. They offered a nice sum of money. And I also had a lot of hope for giving new directors a chance to make films as I had been given a chance with low-budget films. And the directors who did 2 and 3, Rick Rosenthal and Tommy Wallace, were what they were given was a budget and in some cases a script. And, okay, here are the rules of the game. Make your movie. Nobody's going to bother you. It doesn't always work. I thought Halloween 3 was excellent. I really like that film because it's different. It has a real nice feel to it. I think he's a talented director. On the other hand, I think Halloween 2 is an abomination and a horrible movie. I was really disappointed in it. But I don't think the director has gone on and done some other films. I think his career is launched now. I don't think he had a feel for the material. Yeah. I think that's the problem. He didn't have a feeling for what was going on.
And that is vital.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Got to have a feeling.
Yeah. It's interesting. I didn't realize that the guy that pulled out of doing this one, Tommy Lee Wallace, did do Halloween 3 Season of the Witch, the one that Carpenter likes. So maybe the biggest tragedy of this movie is that Tommy Lee Wallace pulled out. If he seems to understand more of the, can tap into the Carpenter oeuvre, you know, maybe he was the man for the job actually.
Yeah. So tell me again. So you've got Carpenter as your EP.
Yeah, some form of producer type.
Sort of producer. But he's obviously hasn't got the final say on bits and pieces, because if he's directing it, if he's producing, he's got old mate directing it before he bails.
Yeah.
There must have been, you know, the studio or whoever's giving enough influence on this for the director to go, you know what, I reckon this is going to be shit, I'm bailing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's,
And I think he's talking about all the sequels too. So I think his name is on there as producer for like all of them. But I don't think he had any – I don't know if it's just one of those things they have to credit him for the rights or something, or if he actually has – maybe he just helps choose the team and then gets out of there. I don't know. It's
maybe probably helps at the – you know, when you're selling the thing to say
John Carpenter's still involved. Attached to it. He's gonna stay there. You know, it's like if your business gets acquired and you have to stay on as the leader for the next 5 years – so it doesn't fall apart. It's probably like that. A movie, a franchise is a business. You need to know that the guy, the brains behind it, still there before he.
It's all business.
Yeah, it's all business. How do you feel about the brother sister thing?
Well, it didn't bother me that much because I always used to think they were related anyway.
Yeah,
I think I'd seen the later ones or part of the later ones. So I just assumed they were brother and sister. And then I watched the first one and probably didn't really register that they weren't.
That they weren't, yeah.
So it wasn't a big thing for me.
Yeah, I think we talked about it last time and then that's a year ago, so I don't really remember. And then before I watched this, I was going into it thinking, are they already brother and sister or is that the one? Is this the one where that comes up? I'm kind of the same. I don't hate it. I don't love it. I don't go, oh, fucking so twisted. But I don't hate it. I think it's probably just because it's the thing that the rest of the sequels seem to latch onto is kind of shitty. I guess the only reason I don't love it as well is that it does start to give maybe too much background on Michael Myers, where you part of the magic is that you don't really know what the guy is. But I can imagine I can kind of imagine why he had to do it though, because why else would he go to the hospital? Like, why is he targeting her? Or even still, maybe you don't need to know. Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. Also to note, and I think Carpenter has cited this himself, one of the Star Wars, which one? Empire Strikes Back? The one where it's I'm Your Father? That had just come out too. That had just come out too. And so this whole
filial revelations.
Yeah.
We're on trend. Yes.
Exactly. And Star Wars is the worst at it, man. The worst. And we're not Star Wars, man. We're not, you know, don't get me wrong. I don't have huge opinions on the Star Wars-y world. But part of the reason I think I don't is because the whole plot is based on people being related to each other. It's just so boring to me. Even that last one, the last one, I haven't seen it, but the last one, it turns out that the main chick in that is the daughter of the bad guy from the first. Like, it's just, why?
She? Ray.
Yeah.
Spoiled it.
But why?
Well, look, I've got to say that it's popular. You know, there's a lot of movies out there, short films of an erotic nature these days that that are predicated stepbrother and stepsister interactions.
I can get into that, though.
It's quite commonly the most popular category on Pornhub.
Look, I love those short art house films too. But when you're talking about a blockbuster, I think you got to go with something a bit more.
Dig a little deeper.
Dig a little deeper, man.
What about a three-way with two stepsisters?
Now you're talking.
There you go.
See this? Even if you're in the writer's room. Wow. I would love to see that. You're in the writer's room pitching these things with sticking pencils in the roof, throwing pencils up. All right, guys, hear me out. They said you have to buy sandwiches. Yeah.
This is all the way across town.
That'd be great. Three stepsisters. This guy's got it. More everything. Because I've been doing the whole John Carpenter thing as well. I've been watching a lot of John Carpenter movies.
Oh, yeah.
And because because Blank Check is doing it. Obviously, great podcast. You probably already listened to it. They're doing it. They're doing all the John Carpenter movies, and so I've been watching them. And I've revealed to myself, or he's revealed to me. I don't know. I've come to the realization that I think what I love about him is the whole less is more thing. There's no, pretty much none of the movies except for maybe Escape from New York in the opening. There's no exposition. You're just kind of dropped into a thing and a bunch of stuff happens and you're just forced to deal with it. Often there's no backstory. Like the thing is very similar to this in that there's no, you don't know what the thing is. You don't know what Michael Myers is. It's just this stuff happens. And it also makes you realize you don't need to know all those other things.
Mm. Let the imagination go to work.
Yeah. So he's kind of the anti-Nolan in many ways.
Because,
You know, Nolan's always like, well, we got to explain why Batman has ears. Put antennas in there. No, man, just let us like wrestle with it ourselves.
He's a Batman.
He's a Batman, man. So I think this is why I've really warmed to him. Now, I've got to say, I've watched a few now and I don't love them all, but I think the ones I do love, that's definitely a big part of it. It's definitely a big part of it.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, yeah. But that is not to say I don't like this movie. I just don't love it. I watched a lot of the sequels, as we mentioned, which I think also raised the score a little bit for me maybe on this one, relatively speaking.
Yeah.
It's just the first two are just in a completely different league to the rest of them, aside from till you get to the later 90s. But there's a lot of junk, man.
It's interesting because it's driven, you know, in a lot of instances, they're driven by commercial targets.
Yeah.
Which ultimately mars the craft. Like you look at the timeline of horror films and slashers, obviously, you know, this was early slasher. You know, well, 78 was. Chainsaw Massacre was apparently the first one. I always thought it was, well, I assumed it was Halloween, but apparently it was Chainsaw Massacre back in like 74, I think.
Right. Yeah, okay.
And then obviously we talked about Halloween and all the reasons that was new and groundbreaking and, you know, it brought the horror to the neighborhood and out of, you know, before that it was monsters and that was sort of the prior trend. And then we had all the slashers that got done to death, excuse the pun.
Yeah.
And then the evolutions beyond that, you know, we had there's a few, but if you look at like Saw and Hostel and all those like gornography sort of ones, this is almost like a version of that in that they had the sort of more cerebral, less is more approach.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, you know what, people actually really like blood, so you got to put a heap more killing. I need more killing. I need more elaborate deaths.
Yeah.
So there's just a market. People like that shit.
People love it, man. Those
can't they both can't they just coexist as different movies?
Yeah, because I mean, maybe there's a good segue into the 2018 one because, yeah, I would love your from what you've seen so far. If you had to choose, you know, so you don't have to choose, but if you did have to choose,
they coexist in the same film.
Yeah, so basically, the 2018 film is Halloween 2. Is a replacement of Halloween 2.
Mm.
So what, based on what you've seen so far, what do you feel is a better sequel to Halloween 1?
What I was watching in the new one.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it feels more interesting to leave something alone for 40 years to and come back. It's the complete opposite. I just said what I liked about this is it picks up immediately where it left off. But then the new one waits 40 years, so I guess they're completely opposing things. But
timing-wise, they both work, right? Like they're both interesting.
Yeah,
doing it straight after is interesting. Doing it 40 years later is interesting.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny.
But it seemed a better – like it seemed a little bit – I don't know. It's made for today's audience, you know. That's the other thing. These trends, you know, old scary movies aren't really that scary for us now when you watch them. Because
that's what you reminded me of the way they're made, and
they tap into whatever's working at the time, whether it's thematically around, you know, Exorcist. That era was always around hell and you know, Omen and all those films. This was like a slashery era.
Yeah.
So the styles of how they execute change as well.
which I kind of like because that's what made me think of it when you were talking about the different styles over the decades and things, which is, you know, like Halloween H2O is very 90s. It almost looks like an episode of like 90210 or something. Mm. So tonally very different to Halloween 1.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
But also, I don't know, maybe I kind of like the idea of a franchise where each sequel is expressed through the language of the day. Mm. So I wouldn't mind if the 2018 one was tied to H2O. So then it's like every 20 years kind of thing, like a 7-Up, you know, that's not bad. Yeah. But it doesn't work that way. And I watched that last year, but I haven't watched it this year, so I don't remember a lot of it. So when you said you were watching it, I watched one of those, you know, the CinemaSins YouTube channel, and it's like everything wrong with this movie.
No, and I haven't just,
seen it. They did it for this. They're usually, they're overly critical. Like most of it's just funny. It's just a chance to make fun of any movie. Mm-hmm. But some of the sins in this in the 2018 one, they raise a good point because if you ignore all the sequels aside from the first one, so if 2018 Halloween is a direct sequel to the first one, Jason only killed like 5 people, which don't get me wrong. Hey, any murder is bad. But in terms of his notoriety and
Michael?
Michael Myers in terms of killing people, like he wouldn't even be anywhere near the top of the list in terms of mass murderers and that kind of thing. And very unlikely that a podcaster would go, this is everyone wants to know about Michael Myers. Like no one would really care, which is interesting. But the other thing that reminded me of, because it was talking about the podcasting angle and how two of the early characters in the movie are podcasters.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've noticed this because we're both also watching Only Murders in the Building, which is also about podcasters. Yeah. But I think podcasting in movies in the 2010s is like hacking in movies in the 90s. It's the representation of podcasting in movies, how they visually represent it. It's not anything like actually podcasting because they're always out on the go. He's like in his car speaking into a microphone. And in Only Murders in the Building, same thing. They're like he's talking into his phone half the time, just catching random things. That's not how you podcast, man. I get it. It's boring watching people actually podcast, but it's pretty funny. We're part of a trope.
Yeah, we are. Maybe it's specific to murder podcasts. So maybe the the serial people because
the investigative
wear scarves more than we do, for instance.
It's true.
You're wearing scarves.
Yeah, that's a trope too, isn't it? It's the hacking of 2010.
It is. Don't you hate it when you're on a beach and your Wi-Fi, what does he say, your modem cuts out?
No, he's like he recognized her as a hacker because we're the only two with our modems on the beach or some shit.
Talking about the net, of course.
The net.
Sandra Bullock, classic.
But you're right. I guess there's a choice there with true crime podcasts where they want to sound a bit on the go, like investigative journalists and that kind of thing. So yeah, maybe investigative, perhaps.
They always work in twos. That was good. We fit the trope. There's two of us.
Yeah, that works. There's three in Only Murders in the Building. I'm really enjoying that show, by the way, Only Murders in the Building. Watch it. It's on Disney Plus in
it's
Australia.
It's great, isn't it? Martin Short's a delight. Carol laughs at everything he says and then repeats me what too. He said. Back to
me too. I do that because I've never been a real Martin Shortman. And now I'm like, what have I been missing? This guy is.
He's glorious in it.
He's so glorious. He only eats dip.
Yeah.
Because he's poor. He's been there, man.
Yeah, you know that. You want to reach out to him and connect him with canned meats.
Yeah.
He's, oh, man, that character's so good. You're right. I think you said he's got to better get some noms for that because it's pretty outstanding.
Amazing. So amazing. I actually, there aren't many things where I legitimately laugh out loud much these days, but that, I laugh. I burst.
It's all low key as well. Like he's the lines it's come little thick character and fast. Things. You miss them. I think that's why B.Y. Carl repeats all more back to me in case I miss them because I'm not laughing as loud as her. But
yeah, I do that to Ara. Oh God! Imagine watching it with both of us.
Too funny.
Should I do a little? So I've watched a lot of the sequels. I won't recap them all per se, but I'll just give you a bit of a sense of. I guess in an effort to give you an indication of where it starts to fall down without giving away too many spoilers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We need this. The world needs this.
Yeah. So there's a few things. From an aesthetic point of view, that the tone, the vibe is completely gone after this one. It already starts to fade a little in this, but it compared to the rest, the first two actually do work quite well compared to the rest. But, yeah, tonally it just completely slides into generic 80s horror vibe.
Mm.
And even some of the like the mask. We talked a lot about the mask in the first movie we covered a year ago, obviously made from Shatner's shitty mask, a shitty Shatner mask. But it's like in the later sequels, instead of just making the mask from the Shatner mask, they've just made a mask that's similar, but it doesn't – it probably costs more to make and everything too, but it just doesn't
– I bet.
And it just doesn't look right. Not that it just looks a bit different. It just – there's some kind of weird magic that happens with the original mask that isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's different actors that play Michael, so he doesn't even appear as scary in some ways, like the stature and I guess maybe how he's directed – so and those are small potatoes really, because it also just goes completely off the wall.
Just sorry, just quickly on that, the whole not using the same guy. Like I get it, it's probably easier. You can just plug in X stuntman.
Yeah,
but it does. Like surely there's got to be some criteria for a bit of consistency, you know?
Yeah, in the Rob Zombie ones, they got I think it was one of those wrestlers. He's huge, so he's very like physically imposing. Presence.
It's which one? The Undertaker? Terrifying. He's a very large man. Large man.
It's more jacked, not just who is it? Oh, Tyler Mane. Who's that? Retired professional wrestler. Oh, his wrestler name was Taylor Mane.
Daryl Carolat.
Look how.
Oh, he's huge. 2 meters and 6 centimeters. What's that in feet? 134 kilos and 2 minutes. That's like 7 foot, isn't it?
Yeah, he's a big fella, man. So, again, the Rob Zombie one is a very different take. There's more backstory. So, again, not very carpentery. But the presence of Michael Myers himself is felt in a big way. Mm. Fucking terrifying. And then you got Loomis, Donald Pleasance, which is so funny to me because he reluctantly signs up to the first movie like he's, you know, too much of a serious actor for this. But he's in more movies. He pretty obviously dies in this movie, right? He blows himself up.
Yeah.
Like fucking Jaws.
Mm.
And, I mean, Michael Myers pretty obviously dies too, but at least he's some kind of supernatural maybe. I don't know.
Mm.
But Donald Pleasance is in number 4 just with some scarring on the cheek.
Oh.
And then as just a little scarring. His hand's perfect. Everything else perfect.
Good
just
for him.
A little scarring. Good for
maybe
him.
Maybe he's the real Michael Myers.
He's in like 3 more too and the scars fade. By the last one, he looks great. He's really old though. He's nearly dead. He dies before it comes out. But anyway, his character too, he just gets like not in a good way, not in like, oh, this is an interesting character arc. He gets just crazier, like a caricature, just like really trigger happy. He's like shaking a kid like, where is it? It's so funny.
Descent into madness.
Yeah. And there's a way to do that right that I would enjoy. Like maybe they could do Loomis the Bounty Hunter where he hunts down all the patients he's failed and just tries to kill them.
Would he get like a little dog? Time.
Yeah.
A little side plat like dog, the bounty hunter?
Yeah. Grow out the banks, all the banks. Why'd you disrespect me, bro? Get 6 bullets and they send him on his way to hunt them down. I'd watch that, but instead we've got a bunch of other sequels. Also, Laurie Strode is out of the picture by number 4. And so they have to come up with all these ways to, A, write her out of it. So she dies in a car accident in between movies.
Oh.
But then they have to kind of have the family tree still present, so they come up with all these convoluted things. So she had a daughter, but then she died, and so the girl that Laurie babysits in part 1 adopts the daughter or something. It's like in the spin-off of it's like the American Pie spin-offs where there's always like Stifler's got a cousin in each of them. It's like yeah, that kind of just a token gesture.
Eugene Levy.
Yeah, someone like that shows up. So it's like, see, it's a sequel. They're all related.
I'm still here.
Paul Rudd is in number 6. And he's not full Rudd yet. So he's playing a very serious, very earnestly. There's pockets of Rudd that show up. I posted one on the ground the other day. It's so funny.
Oh, I missed it.
But otherwise, very serious and very not good. It's his first movie, I think. And that movie is terrible. That's fascinating. It's one of the more entertaining movies because the ones before it were very boring. You don't can't even really follow what's going on. It's now Laurie's daughter and all this shit, and she's got some psychic connection to Michael and all that bullshit. Mm-hmm. But by the time you get to Rudd's one, it's a cult, and there's some explanation for who Michael Myers is or how he became what he is, and they're trying to find another baby to sacrifice, and like all this convoluted shit, which again is completely opposite to everything that's great about the first one. I was thinking it's like, you know, if someone decided to make a sequel to Seinfeld and said, okay, hear me out. What if it was a show about something?
Yeah.
You're doing the opposite. That's the opposite.
Yeah.
So the thing, they fill it with all these things. More.
More everything.
And it wasn't very good.
It's interesting that it's just so interesting that, as you say, it's the direct opposite of the original.
And they know this because then they keep making new sequels that ignore other sequels. So it's not just the 2018 one that ignores previous sequels, even from H2O. So basically I've broken down, after seeing all of them except Resurrection, I've broken down, it's basically a choose your own adventure in terms of what you choose to be the official Halloween canon, which I kind of like the idea of, that there's a bunch out there and you can choose which ones. Make up the story you want. It's kind of modular, you know. It's like buying a modular couch. And you
set it up as you see fit.
Exactly. So you can choose Halloween 1 and Halloween 1 only. That's one option. Not a bad option. That's probably the highest quality option. You can choose Halloween 1 and Halloween 2. Not bad. A little pairing. This one night.
Mm-hmm.
You could watch that in one sitting maybe on a Halloween. You could go Halloween 1, 2, and 4 as a trilogy. As a trilogy, it kind of works. it introduces the little girl, but the ending kind of ties it all back. So it kind of works as a trilogy. You could do Halloween 1, 2, 4, 5, and 6, which is from 1 to Rudd. Getting into all the craziness of the, and then you're just kind of you're going on a wacky adventure.
Mm-hmm.
If you're more into Halloween H2O, you can do 1, 2, and 7. 7 is H2O, and if you like H2O sequel Resurrection, you can do 1, 2, 7, 8.
Oh yeah, of course, 1, 2, 7, 8, classic.
If you're a fan of the new 2018 one, you can do Halloween 1, Halloween 2018, and the one that's about to come out, which maybe has just come out by the time you hear this, Halloween Kills. Do that as a trilogy, or you could just watch the Paul Rudd one. That's the final. or the Rob Zombie ones. That's the other one. Yeah, just not as a rom com. Unfortunately, if only he doesn't even dance.
Oh.
What a shame.
Does he smile?
Yeah, he seems like he's going to be the bad guy at first. Oh yeah, and Paul Rudd in that movie is playing one of the kids that Laurie Strode babysat in the first one, because it has to connect.
Of course.
It has to. And Jim's dad's there.
We'll just say we killed them all.
This might be the first franchise to ignore other movies in the franchise, though, I think. It's become more popular now, I think, with the Terminators and whatnot.
Yeah, well, they're just like, fuck it.
Yeah.
We'll get the banking of the name without the hassle of trying to make it connect. Just free reign.
Or they just choose which one it connects to. It's like Halloween Dark Fate's supposed to be the third one. But I feel like it's a too much of an easy way out. It's like, no, you live with your mistakes.
No disagreement here. Rewriting history?
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, Stallone's even re-releasing Rocky IV, isn't he now?
There's no rules, Tristan.
Yeah, he's editing out the robot. There's no rules anymore. We know we're living in a society. man. Apparently apparently Rocky Balboa ignores Rocky V. That was one I wasn't familiar with. I was looking these up today.
Oh, yeah. Rocky V is with Tommy Morrison, isn't it? Yeah.
I think so. Universal Soldier ignores a few. Jaws, there's a few. Superman. Yeah, there's a few franchises where they do it these days. But whatever. Whatever.
Yeah.
Should we get into verdict?
Yeah, I just got one thing to say.
Yeah.
This Loomis guy, he's sort of, you know, he's meant to be the guy, the one guy that's sort of in the know and keeping things kind of not together, but kind of, you know, he's getting closer to killing Michael. After he couldn't take him down with a six shooter, I don't know. Like, I get it. It's nighttime. Why don't you just get what? You just get another six shooter? Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
He's supposed to be this doctor. I want to see him at his day job. And do they all just like treat him as, oh, Loomis? Yeah. He doesn't even really work here. He's not actually.
He's meant to be the smart one.
And he's not at all.
There's a lot of stupidity here. Yeah. Anyway.
Actually, one other thing before a verdict, a real trope alert here, trope alert, is what it always drives me nuts, and this time I remembered to write it down. It's in lots of things, is Laurie's in the elevator, Michael Myers chases up to the closing door of the elevator, puts his hand in, and it closes in his hand and he pulls his hand out. That's not how elevators work.
Well, did you not remember the UM/Media Brands elevator at 100 Chandler Street?
Yeah, it'll give you a real shove.
That fucker will take you apart, man. It, just, yeah. It didn't stop.
Yeah, right. Only when you're holding a
coffee. You're right.
But it reopens again after it pushes you.
After it kills you. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Whereas this, man, and also you can just press the button and it'll open again. It hasn't left yet. And it happens in so many things and it drives me nuts. Oh, there's always a chase. And they run into the elevator and they're pushing the buttons and the doors. Why wouldn't the door open? You get so many chances. I hate it.
Do you want to hear my funny elevator press the button story at Chalmers yes. Street? So
okay.
There was a lady.
This was our old office, by the way, for those playing where we used to work together.
So there was a lady, two ladies in the elevator. Like one was the old angry finance lady and one was one of the younger girls in the team.
Yeah.
And I was sort of walking up and – yeah, I was about, you know, 5 meters from the door and the door started sort of and one of them reached over to press what I assume was pressing. And she's pressing the button, and I sort of just got there and I was like, oh, thanks. And the young girl was sort of looking like this, like wide-eyed, sort of surprised. And then the other one gets out on the first level, level one.
She's like, she's pressing close.
And yeah, she gets out and she goes, yeah, she goes, she was pressing close. So it was just me, like, just catching the lift. Like, I wasn't miles away saying, hold the lift.
Yeah. And she's pressing it
she's pressing close, like, over and over to get
she's pressing it
close
like,
on me.
Wow.
She's pressing it like that. Yeah, yeah man.
Yeah. Cold, man. She's
what
a cold
what
lady.
What an asshole. Who was it? Does anyone I know? Was it, actually?
Yeah, it was. Oh, she was like the meanest finance lady you could ever imagine.
Yeah.
Anyway, verdict.
Let's get into the verdict.
I don't know what to say, really.
I don't remember asking you a goddamn thing.
The law.
I'd like an answer to the question, Judge.
I want to have them answered immediately.
You can't handle the truth.
What are you waiting for? Ah!
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you.
Nothing further.
Your Honor.
And that's all I have to say about that.
For me, I mentioned all those different bloody ways you could look at Choose Your Own Adventure in the franchise. I don't think this is a must watch, but I think it kind of works as a duo. Like if you could watch, you could watch it with a few mates. You could watch the first two or maybe as a romantic night. You know, like watch, curl up with your loved one and watch scary movies. Watch both in one night. And if you start getting a bit drunk or fall asleep halfway through the second one, not a big deal.
Mm.
But you watch the first one in a more, you know, not inebriated.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the second one, you're probably like not paying a huge amount of attention. Mm. That's okay.
You might be getting some hanky-panky on the couch by the second one.
Getting the old hanky-panky going.
The first one will put him in the mood.
Yeah. How about you, Greg? What's your verdict on this one?
Yeah, like it's okay. I think next to this first one, it's a it's a distant departure. It's not bad for what it is, but it is in a different category to the first one. And, you know, no doubt. It's a slasher full of dumb teens running around and a couple of sets of tits versus all the suspense and just genius behind the first one. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Probably line ball with Jason last week. Maybe a little better.
But Jason wasn't in the one last week.
Yeah, sorry, Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
Just in terms of my overall experience.
Because that was one of my things I was going to say was, aside from this one, later sequels, I think most of the Jason ones are better than all those ones I just went through.
Yeah, right.
Because at least they found something to do with Jason when they got to the more kitschy, campy stuff. Like when he comes out like James Bond and it just gets so silly that, oh, we found our thing. That was good. Whereas this just aimlessly kept going. Yeah. This just kept going and there was nothing. What are we doing here? Yeah.
Yeah.
Did Simpsons do it? I think we covered this last time. So more of the same there. He's got various cameos.
Yeah.
He doesn't talk. Doesn't talk. So there's not much we can do audibly here. Porn parody. I didn't want to look that up. It's too gross.
He did have, he's got a body of work, I remember from last time.
Oh, okay. Bechdel test, I don't believe so. There may be technicality somewhere in there. I don't think so.
We'll go with no.
We'll go with no. FX test was pretty good, man. I think that a lot of the stabbings and needles and all that, there was one directly in the eye and shit.
Yeah.
It was pretty fucked up. Mm. Gotcha.
A couple of good ones. Lifting her up with the scalpel was... In the back. Oh, it's like death on a stick.
And actually from him coming out on him coming out on fire too was pretty legit. That seemed like a long take, him walking out on fire.
Yeah, I liked it. I like a good fire walk.
MVP, I'll give it to Jamie Lee Curtis. Why not?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just pretty good.
She's pretty comatose most of the movie.
Yeah. She's pretty funny, man. I was watching it must have been an interview for the 2018 Halloween, and someone asked her about Halloween Resurrection, which was the one after H2O, and she basically just unleashed on the producers like, it was fucking bullshit, man. It was great.
Yeah.
Because it was her idea. She instigated it. She's like, oh, it's been 20 years since the first Halloween. We're in this unique case where pretty much all of us, John Carpenter, her and everyone, are more famous than they were when it first came out. Like, what if we did a new one? And so she did get John Carpenter involved initially. Then it all started to fall apart because he was less involved. And then they found out clause with the producer that Michael Myers couldn't die. And she's like, because she thought it would be a cool ending. Again, looking at just the first one and this one, and like she kills him in the end. And then, anyway, it's pretty funny. I'll put it on the gram. She's a good egg, man.
Mm.
Big fan.
Indeed.
Anyway, what are we doing next week? I guess we're going to Van Damme because we're overdue, actually.
Yeah. Apologies, it's with Dennis Rodman.
Yeah.
That'll be a lol.
Yeah.
Going from horror to comedy.
I can't wait. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty pumped for that, actually.
Wait.
So I'm not sure where it's available on the streamers, but we can flag it. This one is on Stan, if you're in Australia.
Yeah.
Halloween 2.
Yeah, it's on Stan. Get around it, guys. Get in the Halloween spirit.
Yeah.
Little stabby.
Share a pumpkin spiced latte with Tristan.
Yeah. Have you ever had one of those?
No, they don't have them here.
No.
It's an American thing.
See you next week. Bye.
Cheerio.